You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. It's all O's all the time. As usual, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm a veteran baseball journalist who spent 8 years as a senior editor at Sporting News. I'm a former Cy Young and Rookie of the Year voter, and I host another podcast called Baseball by the Book. I'm a lifelong Orioles fan. That's the most important thing for you to know. We'll get right to it today. We're joined by Matt Taylor of Roar from 34. He and I had a long discussion about Ned Colletti, Chance Cisco, and several other Orioles-related topics. We'll get to that in just a second. Hey, folks, just a reminder. For all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey guys, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We are joined now by Matt Taylor. He's the founder of Roar from 34. Matt's been on the podcast before. Matt, I thought we'd just talk about a few of the things that have been going on in Birdland the last week or so, just catch people up on a couple of the developments. One is something that was reported last week by Ken Rosenthal, late last week, I think, or maybe even over the weekend. I forget exactly when this came out, but he said that the Orioles had conversations with Ned Colletti, and of course people know Ned Colletti best as the former general manager of the Dodgers. And I think Rosenthal's reporting indicated that this may be something they're planning to do with other executives once the, you know, people who are under contract, maybe once the season's over. I don't know if it's clear whether this is, they're looking at him as somebody to replace Dan Duquette, to be, you know, a position over what Duquette is. I don't think it's exactly clear what, if anything, they have in mind for Colletti, but what were your thoughts when you saw that news? I know a lot of people seem to be kind of groaning about it.
Yeah, well, it certainly caught my attention when I saw the story. And I feel like Ken Rosenthal kind of has the Orioles Palace intrigue beat down pat. He's always got some interesting scoops from inside the warehouse. I kind of had the initial reaction that kind of a lot of people do of thinking about specifically Colletti and is he a good fit and what would he do for the team. But the more I thought about it, that I really kind of came to the conclusion for myself that, like, what difference does it make? And I say that in the sense that the bigger question, and I think over time with a lot of the pieces that Ken Rosenthal has done over time, that the big piece that always comes out of that is, like, what really is the front office structure? We hear so much about power struggles and, we get different titles and people playing different roles and how much influence does this person or that person have? And, I think back to, when the Orioles were kind of at a peak there, or more recent peak in during the 1997 wire-to-wire run. And, they had Pat Gillick, who, won two World Series with the Blue Jays, went on to win one with the Phillies, and had such a short stay with the Orioles. So it just made me think, like, does the person that's in that role matter as much right now? I mean, certainly it obviously is something that matters. And I know they don't have this specific role for him, but just having role clarity, who's doing what, and kind of a clearer chain of command seems to be the big question. And I think the only thing more discouraging than the Orioles' current state of play and the state of the franchise is to think, they're going to enter this key period around the trade deadline of moving into the next era and how we recover from, what we're dealing with now and the end of an era. Without a vision, without a vision, without a structure. And that's really concerning to me as a fan. As much as I'm interested in the trades that might happen and who they might acquire, I just really am kind of hungering at this point of what's the vision and who's going to see that through. Cause I'll put up with some bad baseball in the near term if I know that, hey, there really is a plan in place, but there hasn't been a lot of evidence of that. So I guess at the end of the day, it's, if they put someone in there and we really do get a plan and do get some structure, then I'll be happy with it.
Yeah, I saw yesterday, I think it was, the Astros just gave a contract extension and a promotion to Jeff Lunau, their general manager and the guy who's been the architect of all their success. And it just really kind of made me, I guess, jealous maybe is the word for it. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting here thinking, that was a team that was an utter disaster just a few years ago, right? They lost 110 games or so in 2 years in a row. They had the number one overall pick 3 years in a row. Things, you know, completely bottomed out. But they bottomed out with a plan in place, and the plan has gone exceptionally well, I think you'd say. Now, there was no guarantee it was going to go quite as well as it went, but I think there was always a pretty much guaranteed that they were going to get better and that they were going to, you know, that they were going to have some winning baseball come their way because they stuck with what they were doing. They didn't get distracted. And, you know, that's the thing that is, like you said, so frustrating about the Orioles is, I mean, how great would it be for them to take this opportunity to hire an up-and-comer like Lanao and build a system, you know, a 5-year plan or a 4-year plan and say, this is how we're going to get there. This is what we're going to do. And we're going to stick to this plan. And that's the thing that you just, as a fan, you know, is not going to happen when they're talking about retreads like Ned Colletti, no offense to him. But, you know, that just doesn't seem to be what they have in mind. And I don't think anybody knows what they have in mind. And that includes the, you know, Angelo's family themselves. I don't think they really have any clear idea of what they actually want to accomplish as a front office. And that's what's so discouraging. Like you said, it's one thing to lose. It's another thing to lose with the idea that, you know, well, we got our manager and our general manager contracts coming up, but we don't know what we're going to do about them. We don't know who we're going to trade Manny Machado for. We don't even know what we're going to try to get returned for him. We don't even know who's going to make that decision. And that's, it's really tough to swallow.
Yeah, I mean, I think looking back on it, when it's all said and done, it'll be this period of just identifying all the missed opportunities that have taken place along the way. You know, thinking of 2014 and the offseason afterward, and you know, we were dealing front office drama then, and you know, largely inaction during a key period following up on a great year for the Orioles, and you know, missing so many opportunities there, and now looking at Machado and feeling like, well, even if they trade him now, they're not going to get what they could have gotten. They're going to get maybe some initial pieces, but not the full package they could have. So it just seems like several missed opportunities while we wait to see, you know, what is happening. And, you know, it's painting in broad strokes, but, you know, I think back to, you know, the brief pre-Dark Ages era, you know, the 96 wild card and 97 wire-to-wire run and then the Dark Ages. And that's kind of the reference point, it seems, in a lot of the fan discussion of, oh, we're going back to the Dark Ages. But, you know, I think back to 96, and back then the question was, you know, they got all these stars and they're approaching the All-Star break, kind of limping along and underachieving. And, you know, as it was publicly portrayed, at least, there was this battle of Peter Angelos wanting to keep guys and, you know, fans have paid for tickets, so we're going to give them the stars that they paid for versus trading for young talent. And then lo and behold, they turn it around, they get a wild card, have a great 97. But I feel so a brief payoff there, but then beyond that, it seemed like this ongoing, you know, struggle of, you know, what is this team? You know, you bring in some aging veterans or a name here or there, but just kind of limping along and putting together a mediocre roster and saying, okay, well, we might be able to compete somewhat, you know, and that doesn't seem like a good model overall. It seems like let's have a clear direction. And it's been with the team for a long time. And I guess now at this point, having gone through, you know, those 14 losing seasons, that's so fresh in everyone's mind. And it's like, okay, well, we're not just going to do this again, are we? There's got to be some kind of plan. And again, I think people could probably stomach some losing in the short term. I mean, that seems inevitable at this point, but I think really what might keep some buy-in, at least among your more interested or diehard fans, is the sense that we are going somewhere. And you mentioned getting a young up-and-comer. I think that's even a refreshing thought, just in the sense that doesn't seem to be the Orioles' model. And so maybe to get someone like that and say, okay, no, we're really taking a new direction and we're giving this person an opportunity to guide us, would at least provide some encouragement, because, you know, obviously the level of fan disinterest is strong, and I don't know what you can do to really turn that around, lacking a clear plan on the field.
And of course, yeah, I mean, and this is, we know there's this whole issue with the international market as well, where they just basically refuse to participate fully in the international market and really handicap themselves in that sense. And that's another additional level of frustration, because there's obviously a number of great players available that way. and they just don't avail themselves to it, and it just doesn't make any sense. It just is, it's one of those things you say, how can you expect to compete as a Major League Baseball team if you're just cutting yourself off from one of the prime sources of talent? It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, yeah, I don't know if there's any truth to whatsoever. I saw a suggestion, someone was entertaining the thought of, is this a, you know, kind of a moral stance of exploiting players to this market, so we shouldn't do it? And I think that's, you know, on the one sense, it's like, okay, if that were the case, you know, stand by what you believe in. But at the same time, you probably shouldn't be running a baseball operation, because all that is going to hurt in the end is you. Like, this is a talent pipeline, and it, you know, obviously is paying off for a lot of teams. And just to say, okay, we're not going to participate in this talent pipeline. And when you think about what they're getting by, you know, trading away the international money for this sort of thing, it's like, it's not like they're getting a lot from that. You know, they're giving up so much potential by doing that, and then what they're getting in return is so little, that just from a baseball sense, a business sense, it doesn't make sense.
All right, well, shifting gears a bit, the one of the other bits of news recently was that the Orioles sent Chance Cisco back to the minors. And I think I saw a lot of reaction to that on Twitter. Somebody, I think, even said, and I didn't even realize this, but excuse me, I think he has the they said he had the team's second highest Fangraphs WAR behind Manny Machado, I think, which is an indictment of the Orioles for one thing, but be an indication that he's doing okay, and certainly is not the prime problem on this team. And you know, I think the things that I saw indicated, well, if he has some things to work out, well, doesn't it make more sense to have him work them out at the major league level on a 20-50 team rather than sending him to the minors? I mean, what is the point in all that? What are your thoughts on that? Do you think sending him to the minors made any sense? Were you surprised by that?
I was definitely surprised. It wasn't something I was expecting by any stretch. And it is hard to know what is the driver behind this. I mean, it looked at a, in a big picture sense, I mean, from spring training, you know, that was kind of one of the few position battles that was still held intrigue as we approached the end of spring training, where they, you know, had Joseph, Wynn, Cisco, who was going to end up making the club. And I, you know, frankly, I was surprised when Joseph went down, especially, you know, even just away from the baseball field, that he seemed to be the guy that was the go-to quote in the locker room and talked about, you know, we can turn this around. But at the same time, he was the one, I think, after that Yankee series that was saying that this reminded him of some of the earlier 2012 or 2014 teams, which obviously wasn't the best call. But, you know, I think you can make arguments on each side of it. I mean, there's talk about on the defensive side, you know, some work that he needs to do. And is, you know, is being in the minors, is that going to help him get those everyday reps? Is that better than being on the big league club? I mean, I guess a few things that occurred to me just outside of the regular discussion on it is, one is I'm curious just from a you know, general perspective of what the environment's like, you know, for the Orioles and in their clubhouse right now. And with the team doing that poorly, I can't imagine it's a very fun place to be. So, you know, maybe for a young player that go down and get the reps at the minor league level and maybe not be around some of that negativity in the clubhouse. I mean, it's an abstract factor, but, I wonder about it. And one thing that surprised me, I guess, is that, and it probably shouldn't, but the reaction there has been to it and almost a certain, you mentioned Twitter, almost a certain outrage about it. And I certainly don't reach the level of outrage. Like I said, it was a surprise to me, but I feel like there's a certain confirmation bias that takes place a lot with, you know, with fans and probably Orioles fans, where there's certain thoughts we have in mind about the team, and, you know, there just becomes more evidence to support that. So it seems like one of the things that the general fan base seems to think is, you know, we don't give young players a chance and, you know, don't develop young talent. And this is like another example of that to confirm that observation, like, here's a young talented player and, you know, we're not giving him a chance at the major league level. And in some sense, it seems like folks want to turn over the whole roster and just put the young guys out there, you know, as if that's going to bring back the fans and, you know, generate this great interest. But yeah, I get the idea that, hey, it's something different. And I think any young player, when they come up, provides that hope. But, you know, players get sent down all the time. I mean, I remember last year I was writing a post. I wound up looking at an old Sports Illustrated article And I think it might have been an article about Derek Jeter. And I know that Orioles fans aren't supposed to mention or read about Jeter, but I did read this piece, and it mentioned when Buck Showalter was managing the Yankees, and it recounts this time where Jeter and Mariano Rivera had just been sent back down to the minors. And they're like in the back of a taxi talking, and kind of makes it sound like Jeter was pondering if he's going to get back, you know, or is this it? Has he missed his chance? And, you know, I'm sure there's some embellishment in that anecdote as it's presented, but it is a reminder that the greatest players to, you know, to play the game have gone down to the minors after making an appearance at the majors, and it happens. And whether it's service time, whether it's, you know, is in fact struggling with defense, whether there's some other politics at play, I just label it surprising, but it, you know, it's not the end of the world. And, you know, he's going to be back, and I don't think it's going to damage him or damage his value.
Another thing that's happened recently is we found that Richard Bleier, who was, you know, having one of the better years on a team that, you know, didn't have a lot of bright spots, is out for the year. And he is somebody who had been talked about as a possible all-star if Manny Machado gets traded before the all-star break. So obviously that's a pretty big blow to the team. That's a question that's come up. Like, if Machado gets traded before the all-star break, and I don't think he's going to be, but if he gets traded before the all-star break, who is the Orioles all-star representative? Is there anybody would make sense?
Wow. That's a great question. I honestly hadn't thought too much about that one, but, I guess the only way I thought about the kind of the all-star, process was to think back about, past teams like that have, and the all-stars that we've sent along the way, and just because we had to send somebody. That's a great question. I mean, I guess you got to get into the deserving all-star versus deserving, you know, relative to the rest of the team. Dylan Bundy is not an all-star, but, you know, would you have him on an all-star squad because, well, relative to the rest of the team, he's actually got some star potential. And obviously, you know, the fans don't vote on the pitchers, but that's a good question. And I feel just awful for Bleier. I mean, I think that in the season of relatively little to almost no feel-good element, that he was a feel-good story. And I think that his path, you know, that seemed to be going kind of jokingly at first that, hey, this guy's going to be the Orioles all-star, to, hey, this might actually be the case, is just, you know, it's sad. It's a guy that's worked for a long time and seeing some success there and is, you know, in a really poor season, a feel-good element to it. And so for him to be denied that opportunity is pretty heartbreaking as a fan. And it also hurts my interest. That's the sort of thing that I pick at to try and remain interested, as, you know, the team as a whole is just difficult to watch. It's like, well, there's someone you can root for and follow along, and whether it's watching a game or even just following along in the box score. So just I feel awful for him at the end of the day, and really did want him to be the O's All-Star representative.
Yesterday, on Monday, we're recording this on Tuesday, the Kansas City Royals traded Kelvin Herrera. They had previously traded John Jay. They're a team that is having, you know, almost as bad a year as the Orioles. Not quite record-wise, but it's still a pretty disastrous year for the team that the Orioles played in the playoffs not too long ago. I saw, again, on Twitter, some people kind of getting a little bit perturbed by that. Should we be concerned that, you know, one of the other bad teams has already started to move assets this early and the Orioles haven't done anything? Or would you expect that the Orioles are just going to wait until July, like typically a team would do under these circumstances? Should people be concerned that nothing's happened yet?
I think there's going to probably be outrage until something does happen. My sense has been that with as awful as things have been, people just want something, you know, it's fire somebody and trade somebody. And so I think there's going to be that anger about the lack of action. I mean, Machado is one that they have waited too long, and I don't know that it makes a big difference between now and the All-Star break in terms of what they're going to get for him. I mean, it's a little extra time, but it's still, you know, going to be difficult to get what a player of that caliber deserves in return. And anyway, the longer that goes, the more I wonder. I'm like, are they really going to, you know, not do this? Are they really going to get to the end of the season and end up with a draft pick and that's it, after having, you know, one of the greatest assets you could have? And then, you know, when it comes to some of the other trades they might make, I mean, you're talking about you know, guys like Britton, who's, you know, we need some time for him to show that he can still pitch the way he was prior to his injury and increase some value there. And I think, you know, I know I've seen Brock's name mentioned, Adam Jones is a possibility. And I think those are probably be more as teams have, you know, real needs develop, whether it's through injury or just feeling like they need a little extra something to push them over the hump. But I mean, I think anything with Machado, the longer he stays, the more frustrating it becomes. But I don't know that necessarily the Royals making that trade adds to any urgency for me or makes me more frustrated. The thing that frustrates me is to look at the standings and realize, yeah, boy, the Royals are in our boat, but realize that, well, they played in two World Series and won one. So yeah, I'd be a lot happier with where we're sitting now if you know, 2014 had gone better, or any of the other, you know, I guess three playoff appearances that they've made overall. But yeah, that doesn't add an urgency to it. I think I'm probably past the point with Machado of being disappointed and just feel like kind of just curious now, like, what are they gonna get for this guy?
Yeah, it's interesting because I've had this conversation with numerous people that it seems, you know, inevitable they're going to trade him. Like, all logic dictates you trade him for something at this point. But I keep telling people, especially non-Orioles people I talk to, don't be totally surprised if they don't do anything, because this is the Orioles and this is Peter Angelos ultimately making the decision. Don't necessarily expect them to do the logical thing, because they don't often do the logical thing. So
yeah,
it's kind of amazing to think they might not do it. But I think if any team was not going to do it in this circumstances, this is the team.
Yeah, well, and it really brings it back full circle in terms of, you know, leadership at the top and, you know, what the level of ownership involvement, that sort of thing. Like, what is the vision here? Because none of this is a surprise. You know, they've seen this coming, that, you know, I think most anyone would say, okay, they're not going to be able to pony up the money. And even if that were possible for the Orioles organization with the Davis contract, they're not going to do it. So it's something we've seen coming. And, you know, we've gone through last year's trade deadline. We've gone through an off season where we heard all these rumors that, okay, this is getting serious. They're now, you know, shopping him and getting offers. And, you know, so here we are again, now approaching the trade deadline. So if it, I think, yeah, I'm with you. I would not be surprised. I mean, it's on the outside looking in, it would be shocking to think, how do you let that happen? But I could absolutely see it happening. This is the Baltimore Orioles, after all.
All right. Well, on that note, I'll let you go, Matt. If people want to find you, it's roarfrom34.com. Is that right?
Yes, roarfrom34.com. And I'm on Twitter at roarfrom34. And I'll just in closing say that, you know, when we talked at the outset of the season, we were talking about the anniversary of that 88 team.
Right.
And, you know, part of that was a conversation about romanticizing the losing and kind of some of the fun stories in hindsight. And I didn't know how actually relevant it would be to this season, but I can say most definitely that this is not fun.
No, it's not fun at all. And I think that's the thing that Orioles fans are realizing this year, is that, and not that, you know, many of them have been through bad seasons before, but we kind of got used to the team being decent for a few years at least, and it's no fun to go back and remember just how bad it is when a team is just completely hopeless. And hopefully this is not going to last forever. Hopefully they are going to figure out a way to get back on the winning track in a few years. I don't know how that's going to happen, but maybe it will. So we'll leave it at that.
Stay tuned.
All right. Well, thanks, Matt.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.